This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
www.gracelaw.org or call 713-869-4722. That's www.gracelaw.org or 713-869-4722. This is a commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston 90.1.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices for June 18th, 2007. Welcome to the program. This is Deborah Bell.
And Jennifer Renee.
Katie Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
And that's the Queer Voices crew for tonight. We have a very interesting program prepared for this evening. We'll be talking with Tiffany Bird. She's the Adult Activity Director at the Baring Omega Services for the Adult Care Center. And we'll talk to her about the programs that are offered there and how it serves the needs for those with HIV or AIDS. And Joan Devlin will talk with Houston author Lance C. Trudeau about his latest work, From the Depths of Hell.
Ooh.
About two men struggling through a relationship while trying to deal with their own secrets and baggage.
God, that sounds like everyone.
I started to say, I think that's a story we all can relate to. And of course, we're getting closer to the Pride Festival and Parade, so we'll be talking about what's in store for this year. Plus, JD, you have...
Hey, musical guest, one of the Pride performers, Josh Duffy, will be here live, and we'll play some music and talk to him.
And we will probably mention it several times during the show, but for more information on where to go for information about Pride events, www.pridehouston.org, correct?
Very good, Glenn.
Very good.
Now, I
even listen to the show that I produce sometimes.
Oh, wow. You do learn things, don't you?
Yes.
And, of course, we'll have This Way Out, the internationally syndicated news magazine, and lots of music that J.D. will...
Yeah, I want to fit in some other music by other Pride performers so we can get a taste of that.
All right. So first we're going to go to This Way Out.
If I can hit the cursor correctly. There we go.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Don Lupo.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 16th, 2007. Colombia's legislature this week made it the first nation in Latin America to pass a bill granting same-gender couples many of the rights of married and common-law heterosexual couples, including health insurance, social security, and inheritance rights. Registered same-gender couples must be of legal age and have lived together for at least 2 years. Advocates had tried four times since 1999 to pass the legislation, but until now they were unable to overcome vociferous opposition from the Roman Catholic Church. Marcela Sanchez, director of the queer rights group Colombia Diversa, told reporters that as many as 300,000 lesbian and gay couples in the South American country will benefit from the new law. Her group formed soon after the last rejection in 2003 to lobby for the bill's passage. Its success this time is attributed to a February constitutional court ruling that struck down the definition of cohabiting couples as men and women in a law that allowed unmarried couples joint ownership of land and rights when one partner dies. The court said the law must be gender neutral. While the High Court justices said that their decision did not automatically provide full legal recognition to lesbian-gay couples, proponents said that the ruling showed for the first time that the court favored greater rights for same-gender relationships. Colombia's two legislative chambers must agree on unified wording of the bill before sending it to President Álvaro Uribe, who previously announced his support for it. Senator Armando Benedetti, one of the bill's sponsors, told the Associated Press that this is a victory that only a few months ago seemed unthinkable in this country. To my surprise, the Congress has shown itself to be a modern, responsible, and liberal institution. Swedish gay and lesbian couples have been able to enter into civil partnerships since 1995, but many liberal politicians and queer activists charge that such unions are not equal to marriage and are now outdated. Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt's conservative moderate party has so far refused to support full marriage equality, as recommended by a parliamentary committee last year, but eight of his party's supportive MPs, including one cabinet minister, threatened this week to resign over the issue. Two of the coalition government partners, the Center and Liberal parties, also strongly support such legislation. A fourth party in the coalition, the Christian Democrats, is opposed and has threatened to scuttle any move toward marriage equality. The Prime Minister said that his party will make a decision on the issue at its annual conference in about 3 months, but his renegade MPs are pressuring him to act sooner. The marriages of some 8,500 same-gender couples in the only U.S. state where they're legal, Massachusetts, appear to be safe, at least for the next 5 years. The legislature this week refused to put a constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriage before state voters in 2008. The proposed ban, which needed to be approved by at least 50 out of 200 lawmakers in two consecutive joint legislative sessions to be placed on the ballot, was supported by only 45 lawmakers this week. 62 supported the proposal during its initial consideration in the legislature less than 6 months ago. Former Republican governor and now presidential hopeful Mitt Romney strongly supported putting the marriage ban before voters, but his successor, Democrat Deval Patrick, has been a vocal opponent. Anti-equality forces vowed to continue the fight, however, possibly through yet another petition drive and another battle in two consecutive legislative sessions. Secretary of State William F. Galvin said this week that if those efforts were successful, such a proposal couldn't be placed before voters until at least 2012. Many believe that those chances are slim, however, because the state's voters have tired of more than 3 years of highly contentious and often heated debate on the issue. Lesbi gay advocates say they still have one more fight in Massachusetts, repealing an antiquated law that has been used to prevent marriages by same-gender couples from other states. Most other U.S. states have laws banning recognition of same-gender couples. The law says couples cannot be married in Massachusetts unless their unions would be legally accepted in their home states. It was passed in 1913, ostensibly to prevent interracial couples from marrying there. As soon as same-gender couples from out of state began applying for marriage licenses in Massachusetts in 2004, then-Governor Mitt Romney directed municipal clerks not to issue them, citing the 1913 law. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, which legalized same-gender marriage in 2003, upheld the 1913 law last year, ruling that the state has a significant interest in not meddling in matters in which another state, the one where a couple actually resides, has a paramount interest. Queer activists say they want to take some time to savor the defeat of the marriage ban amendment, but Mark Solomon of the queer advocacy group Mass Equality said that he expects to meet with the state's top politicos sometime soon to discuss the introduction of a bill to repeal the law. The governor and leaders of both houses of the state legislature have signaled their support for such a measure. U.S. LGBT civil rights groups this week also marked the 40th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down state laws that specifically banned interracial marriage. In the 1967 case, called Loving v. Virginia, the High Court ruled that the freedom to marry has long been recognized as one of the vital personal rights essential to the orderly pursuit of happiness by free men.
In other news, the landmark adoption of a baby boy by two gay men in Western Australia has the country buzzing. It's believed to be the first adoption of an unrelated child by a same-gender couple in Australia, hailed as groundbreaking by queer rights proponents and predictably condemned by a plethora of right-wing religious groups. The state changed its laws in 2002 to open adoption to qualified same-gender couples. The unnamed gay couple has been waiting since then for a child. State Attorney General Jim McGinty, who spearheaded passage of the laws, said the recent adoption had the full consent of the child's birth mother. The only consideration when it comes to adoption is the best interests of the child, he said. The boy's birth grandmother phoned a Perth radio station this week to defend the adoption. It's not a matter of being gay or not, it's a matter of being in the best place and the best parents, she said, and that's what these guys are. The government of Australia's Conservative Prime Minister John Howard opposes legal recognition of and adoption by same-gender couples.
Pride was on the march at the 32nd annual parade on June 10th in the Northern California city of San Jose. It highlighted a two-day family festival that drew more than 9,000 people to booths, a concert stage, and children's playground. A woman who brought her husband and three children to the parade told the San Jose Mercury News that she wanted to teach my kids that being gay is not wrong or bad,
Everybody's different. In a related story, the San Jose City Council voted 10-2 this week to file a friend of the court brief supporting neighboring San Francisco's California Supreme Court challenge to the 2000 voter-approved law that restricts marriage to a man and a woman.
In Southern California, the usual hundreds of thousands celebrated West Hollywood's 37th annual Pride Festival and parade during the same weekend. Newly out, retired pro basketball player John Amici served as Grand Marshal. The traditional hunky bodies, marching bands, and festive floats mixed with political banners demanding LGBT equality. Last week, the state assembly again passed a bill to open marriage to gay and lesbian couples, but Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has vowed a veto if it reaches his desk, as he did in 2005. He claimed then and maintains now that only the state Supreme Court can overturn that ban on same-gender marriage, approved by voters 7 years ago.
In Canada, thousands also hit the streets of Calgary, Alberta, on June 10th at its 17th annual Pride March, capping a festival celebrating diversity. A giant rainbow flag demonstrated what organizers called harmonious unity. Several pridegoers frolicked in a fountain during the after-party at a downtown plaza.
In the Australian state of Queensland, more than 2,500 celebrants marched with Pride on June 16th in Brisbane. They carried banners urging anti-bias protections for LGBT people in the workplace and equitable treatment for gay fathers. Organizers said this year's turnout almost doubled that of last year's event.
However, police needed tear gas to disperse protesters throwing stones and fireworks at about 400 people in the annual LGBT Pride March in the Romanian capital of Bucharest on June 9th. About 100 protesters were arrested, according to police officials, but no one was seriously injured. Earlier in the week, however, at least 8 people assaulted 2 men leaving the annual Gay Fest film festival in Bucharest. Police intervened and arrested several of the attackers. Florin Bahushanu, one of the organizers of the Pride March, told reporters that it is our right to express our beliefs and we will not renounce them in the face of violence.
And finally, more than 1 million people marched in the streets of the Brazilian city of Sao Paulo on June 10th as part of what organizers say is the world's largest Pride event. A festival leading up to the parade drew an estimated 3 million people. Police confirmed the crowd figures, which exceeded last year's turnout of 2.5 million. Along with its traditionally colorful parade entries, participants carried banners demanding an end to homophobia in the country. According to activists, more than 2,500 LGBT people have been murdered in Brazil since the early 1980s. Parade organizer Nelson Matias Pereira said this year's participants were appealing for a world where racism, sexism, and homophobia in all their forms no longer exist.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 16th, 2007. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Don Lupo.
tonight.
This is J.D. Doyle, and tonight I'm going to try and bring you as many Pride Festival artists as I can. Those two guys are twins. They go by the name Nemesis Rising, and they're the lead act for the Pride Festival. That song was called Number One in Heaven.
This is Queer Voices.
Yeah, and I saw Josh perform at the Pride kickoff event and heard that song. We are going to talk with Tiffany Bird. She's the Adult Activity Director at Bering Omega Adult Care Center. So, welcome.
Hi,
Tiffany.
Thank you for having me.
Now, what exactly is the Adult Care Center? Tell us a little bit about how it came to be and what's done there.
Okay, well, it was founded in 1987, and it first started just to be a place where family members who were working, they could drop off their loved ones that were suffering from HIV, AIDS. So it was first sort of served as that. And we served meals, and we had a nurse that was always on, duty. Now it's sort of developed into a place that is trying to focus on all of the sort of health aspects, physical, mental, and emotional. So we still serve meals. We open from 7 to 5. We have meals, we have lunch, snack, and breakfast. We have a nurse that is there all day. We have a dietitian that comes once every 2 weeks. We have, field trips. We have fun. So it's just pretty much a combination of socialization. We have a nurse that really focuses a lot on medication management, because that's a huge problem. So,
well, one of the things about an environment like this is that it gives people a place to socialize.
Absolutely.
And not be so isolated. Some of them maybe could be at home alone,
mm-hmm.
but they would be isolated, and so it helps them be around other people and also to have a peer group that offers support.
Absolutely.
Right.
And we have many clients that have been clients for 15 years, and they do not have any social foundation outside of our center. So they have been coming, and it's really family to them.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that's a part of it really feels completely accepted, and they have that connection with other clients that they might not have with a family member or with just the average person that they meet. So that's really important.
Well, we'll take a little trip down memory lane, which is in the mid-80s. Many of the members of the Bering United Methodist Church were being affected by AIDS, by the onset of HIV and AIDS, which usually from HIV to AIDS was a fairly short period at that time, and many people were very sick and dying. And it was like someone over a course of a few months going from age 30 to suddenly like 75. I mean, it was just that rapid of a decline in their health and their abilities. One of the problems with HIV/AIDS is wasting syndrome, and also having to have proper nutrition and a balance of the meals depending on what medications. So that can be a lot to manage, and plus dementia is an issue that occurs with people with AIDS. So it was certainly a much needed space, and I'm not sure that they started off serving meals right away, but it soon became apparent that that was going to be an important service to offer. And I remember, because I worked with the support group at Bering, that they said, you know, having the meal cook and the smells just was an incentive for a lot of people to be able to eat, whereas if they had just gotten, you know, like a sandwich somewhere, it just wouldn't have, they may not even eat it there because they wouldn't be hungry or, you know, and then also to help remember about the medications. So I imagine things are somewhat different there now.
Well, actually, I mean, with HIV medication, it's definitely come a far, like a very, you know, far away from the 80s whenever it first developed, and there's less side effects. But I feel like a big problem now in the HIV/AIDS community is just medication management. And that's what I think a lot of education is starting to be focused on, is whenever you have HIV, is doctors are trying to stress that you have to take your medication. So we deal with that, of just trying to make sure that they have a healthy diet, because most of the meds you have to eat with, you know, so you have to make sure that you are staying healthy in that way. So we help with that. And I mean, there are a lot of clients that we have that have had HIV for a very long time, so they do suffer from strokes, dementia, wasting syndrome, and a lot of symptoms that you don't really find in the average HIV community now. But we also have clients that, you know, that are fairly new at all of this, and we serve as sort of you know, role model or just figure to help them cope through everything
and help them find other resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such as the support group.
Yes,
which is still meeting Wednesday nights.
Yep, it's still meeting Wednesday nights, and they have potluck, I think, beforehand, and it's really thriving.
And then there's a speaker, or there's a group member that will talk, and and then there's small breakout groups where you can deal with different sessions.
Yes.
I worked really hard on that. Those potlucks are so fun.
I know.
And some of the other activities that we've done, such wonderful people, some of the nicest people I ever met in my life.
I know. And, they're wonderful.
In 1992, the NAMES Project Quilt was being shown on the mall in Washington, D.C., and I was up there working with the 1993 March on Washington, and so I got to speak, read names.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, one thing, I had been there when the quilt was first laid out in 1987, so this was pretty powerful stuff. Also, the fact that I spoke after Jane White, Ryan White's mother. But the list they gave me happened to be some of my guys from Barron.
Oh, my gosh. Which must have been heart-wrenching.
It was, but it was also kind of magical.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it was like, I get to tell them goodbye in this way. I mean, I could see the benefits that people got from participating in the group and from the care center being there.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the benefits that people get from being at the care center?
I think definitely the most obvious is they start to become less depressed, because they're automatically, you know, around people and socializing and in a more comfortable environment than I think they might have been at their home, when they might have been just sitting there and watching television. So I think definitely that I personally have seen a lot more motivation and initiative, and I have a lot of clients that my hopes for all of them are to, you know, like, move on into volunteer somewhere else or with us, and to maybe go back to work, and to, you know, so basically use our center as a stepping stone to, you know, getting back into life and to society comfortably.
And for those that are too sick to do that, there's a place for them to
absolutely
be.
Absolutely.
A very positive place.
Absolutely.
Say that I have HIV and I become ill, and I mean, it's not really a good idea for me to be by myself all day.
Mm-hmm.
And can I go there just one time, just one day, or do I have to sign up for a certain amount of time? How do you get into the program?
Well, basically, you just have to fill out our application, which you could get online, or you could just simply come to our center, and we can help you and sit there with you and fill it out. But I think that it definitely... You are welcome to come once a week. I mean, you are welcome to come whenever you're feeling up to
Some
it.
Some people just come to have lunch.
Well, yeah. A lot of our clients come and they, you know, come in the morning and then they'll stay through morning and then we'll do, you know, crafts or we'll have games or we'll go somewhere and then have lunch and then they'll leave because they're tired or, mm-hmm. you know, and that's fine. That is mm-hmm. completely fine. So, but all of our clients come at least once a week. If like their health permits, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah.
And then if they're better, they can not come, mm-hmm. And then if they need to come back, I mean, there's no.
Well, I mean, we have a general rule that they need to come once a week, but let's say that they can't for. Reasons such as, you know, they are not feeling well or they're, you know, have family problems or they're going on a vacation. I mean, we're like, oh, okay, fine, you yeah. know, fine, great. And then they just let us know whenever they're going to come back, you know. So there's definitely open communication between all of us.
What's the capacity of numbers of people that you can serve on a given day?
On a given day, we can serve 40 people. So, and we can have it to where, I mean, people come and go. So people can usually not come in after 12 because that's when we have lunch. So most of our clients come in before 12. But let's say that they come in early, then they usually stay about 3 or 4 hours and then they leave. So, you know, it's like not always the same people staying throughout the day. So it really depends. But we can hold up to 40 people.
Mm-hmm. And do you usually have as many as 40?
No, usually we have between like 20 and 25. So I think that I would love to have more people coming because there's just so much more energy. And we have a lot of volunteers that help in so many ways. I mean,
well, like you said, a lot of the volunteers come from people that have received services
exactly.
or who go to the support group. It's always amazed me how,
exactly.
how that has happened
yeah.
within the AIDS movement
uh-huh.
that it was like somebody, you know, especially people that are doing well to realize that they have something they can offer
mm-hmm.
others.
Yeah.
And it's very positive.
It's so positive. I mean, absolutely every day I am inspired over and over again because there's so many stories and so many wonderful people that I'm just amazed by their kindness and generosity. So.
Jennifer, do you know where the care center is?
It's over at Bering Methodist Church. The building right on Hawthorne and
Mulberry.
Mulberry. See,
it was a trick question.
Yes, it is. I go there on first Monday of every month, and that's the church I go to. So, no, it's right there in the back. You can find it. It's open all the time, isn't
it? It is open every day during the week, but not during the weekend.
Not during
24/7.
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, and 7/5.
But it's available to them
Absolutely.
5 days a week.
Absolutely. 7
for service.
To 5,
yeah.
yes.
And so people can go to the website, www.baringomega.org, or call 713-529-6071. The Baring Omega Adult Care Center for people with HIV/AIDS. And you're the activities director.
Yes.
And I have to give thanks to Siobhan Potter, who's the care center
mm-hmm.
manager, for sending you over to talk with us. What are some of the things that you do as an activities director?
Well, other than the obvious, which is planning everything, I really try and spend a lot of time with our clients in the morning. And but basically, I make it to where I always ask the clients what their interests are. So I try and mold every month around them. We go bowling. I mean, you would be bowling's very popular there. I mean, and it's actually funny because I think I've bowled once a month for a year and a half now, and I've not improved. But every one of my clients has. So, but bowling, we go to the movie theater. We go on a lunch outing once a month. We have party every month. We, you know, have a support groups every Friday. So I try and manage and get guest speakers or educational programs sort of in there, a book club, just really try and make it as balanced as possible. So between like managing volunteers and managing the clients, then I also try and, you know, reach out and make them as happy as I possibly can. So and give them as many options as I can. And we paint and do a lot of crafts as well. So yeah, so there's really any, I mean, everything.
When my kids were still kids, still in school, and I was working at Behring, sometimes like it was a school holiday or something. So my kids would come over, mainly my younger one, who would come over, and he'd go over to the care center and talk to the guys, and they thought he was older because he had such a big vocabulary, but yeah. And the good thing about it was he saw firsthand what AIDS was about, and he knew people that had AIDS, and he knew people that died from AIDS. So, you know, his insight to that is very good.
Absolutely.
Now, if somebody listening wanted to volunteer, what should they do?
They should definitely, if they have access to the internet, they should go online, and we have a special link for volunteers, and that has the number of our volunteer coordinator. If not, definitely call the Behring Omega Community Service main number, which is 713-520-7070, and it will transfer you to the volunteer coordinator.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Great.
Is there anything that we didn't ask you about that you want to share with us?
No. Just thank you so much for having me.
Okay, no, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much for being here on Queer Voices.
One October night, I fell for you. The earth blocked the sun's light from reaching the moon. There was no one.
if not people, I thought channels could change. Sitting here now, I see glowing in front of me.
This is JD again, and that was kind of a hit parade extra for this evening. Those were not festival artists. That was a group I much like called Girly Man, and that's their fourth or fifth CD. They're very prolific. The song was called You Were the Lie. The CD is called Joyful Sign. Before that, you heard an artist who will be here this Saturday at the festival, Amy Cook. Her brand new CD is called The Sky Observer's Guide, and you may have heard her on The L Word and a lot of other TV shows. That song was called Coming Home.
This is Queer Voices. Now, Joan Devlin used to be with us live and in person when she was here living in Houston. She has since moved on to bigger and better things, and she is still with us in electronic form. And Joan, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, there you are. Okay, good. Joan comes to us live from the tornado-ravaged cornfields of Iowa.
Yeah, tornado ravaged.
Yeah. Have you actually been having tornadoes out there?
About 2 weeks ago, the sirens went off, and we had to do the, duck and cover thing at work, but fortunately, it was just a false alarm.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a guest here live in the studio who's going to chat with you this evening. What's he going to chat with you about?
His name is Lance C. Trudeau, and he is the author of two books. One is called The Nuts on My Family Tree, but his most recent one is called From the Depths of Hell, and that is the one we will be talking about tonight.
Go right ahead.
Hey, Lance, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, Lance, your books are wonderful. First of all, let me encourage everybody to get them both. And I want to talk a little bit about From the Depths of Hell, because it sounds, you know, so when you first start reading the description, it sounds like the quintessential love story. It's about a young professional man named Luke and his handsome friend, Chad. You know, they meet at a dentist's office. You know, it's love at first sight. You know, Luke thinks he'll never see him again. Then they meet. They begin dating. Luke thinks he's found his soulmate. And then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. Well, first off, I was going through a bad period in my time when I first started writing this book, so I started writing it more kind of for therapy. And plus, I wanted to cover a little bit of storyline with HIV, because I've lost a lot of friends to AIDS, and over time I would see movies and things, and what it seemed like every time that I watched one of these, one of the main characters would die off at the end, and I wanted to have a different kind of story where HIV could be a part of it but not the main storyline, and I wanted to show that, you know, you can survive and go on, and somebody doesn't necessarily have to die at the end of the story to make a good storyline.
I also like the idea that you put in there that happily ever after, you know, is possible even when the two people involved are not necessarily perfect themselves.
Yeah, nobody's perfect, and I wanted to show, you know, that you can work at a relationship and you can actually work through problems. It just seems like I see so many times with friends that I know who are in a relationship that their boyfriend, at the first sign of trouble, he just like turns and runs and instead of trying to work out the problem. And I think a lot of times men in general kind of have that mentality. I'm not saying they all do, but some of them do, where they are always kind of looking over their shoulder or around the corner for something better, and instead of working what they have.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, without realizing sometimes that the something better is, you know, what they have now, not what they could possibly get if they, you know, did turn that corner.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, too, when you work through a problem, it actually helps you have a stronger foundation and a better relationship than just, you know, moving on to the next and to the next to the next.
Now, you said writing this book was therapy, and for our listeners just checking in, we are talking to Lance C. Trudeau about his book, From the Depths of Hell. How was this therapeutic for you? Was it just a relationship thing you were going through at the time, or just something you kind of had experienced in your past and wanted to work through, or just kind of a mix where you felt like you'd always had a book inside of you and something personal that was happening finally pushed you to let it out, or what was it?
Well, I always wrote as a hobby, even in high school. I just never really, you know, explored the possibility of getting published. But at the time that I was writing this, I had a friend who had some health issues, and he was on a lot of different medications, and he was suffering from depression and on a lot of antidepressant medicines that weren't really working for him, and he ended up committing suicide, which was part of the reason I really wanted to get this book out, to, you know, give some hope to people, to show that you can, you know, work through things, and, you know, if you take medications, if you're on it for HIV or whatever, you know, antidepressants, if you take them and you see your doctor and stuff, you can have a wholesome, good life, and it doesn't have to be, you know, the way he ended up.
What is the response, then, to the book so far?
Well, everybody that I know who's read it has come to me and given me rave reviews, which was a real great boost to my, because, you know, this was something I really worked hard at, and I really wanted to, you know, give some hope and inspiration to people that you can have a good relationship with people, and you can have a good relationship with another man, and, you know, sometimes it takes a lot of work, but you can do it if you really try. And part of the reason I picked the kind of abstract title is sometimes when your relationship is going downhill, you feel like you're in that kind of sinking into a dark area, and and it can be hell. And this was kind of an inspirational book in finding ways to rise up above that.
Yeah, and also realize that just as you can sink into hell, you can also, as you said, come back up out of it. And now let's move on real quickly and talk about your other book, The Nuts on My Family Tree. That was much more lighthearted, a story about your family. What prompted you to write that? Because the two books are very different, actually.
Yeah, they're very different, completely different storylines and, you know, for reading audiences too. But I kind of, after my grandmother passed away, I decided I wanted to write a story because in our family everybody kind of gravitated to her house, and you know, I took some old family memories and some of the personality traits of some of our family and decided I was going to write a little comedy, and I just wanted to, you know, give something to would make people laugh, because I really enjoy comedy movies and comedy books and things, because I'm kind of lighthearted and humorous, so I decided I was going to take a stab at that and see how it turned out.
And what has the response been to that one? It's kind of interesting to me, because I read From the Depths of Hell first, and it was like, wow, this was so moving, and then I read The Nuts on My Family Tree second, and I was like, it's the same person who wrote this, but it's just, it's almost like it's two different people in some ways. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So what have people thought that have read both of them? Because they are both very different books. And usually authors, a lot of authors, they'll kind of stick to the same themes over and over again.
Well, I kind of like to move around to different themes. Right now I'm kind of working on a sci-fi story, actually. But I really did enjoy writing the Nuts of My Family Tree. And I was giggling along the way while I was writing it and stuff, you know, reliving some old family memories. And both my sisters, I got them a copy, and they thought it was hysterically funny. And they said that anybody who read it, even if they didn't know some of the people that I had molded some of the characters from, would find it enjoyable. And I just had a lot of fun with it.
And where can people get copies of your books?
Well, they can order them on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble. There are a few Barnes & Noble stores that have them on hand. I think on their website you can put your zip code in and they can tell you. Also, they're available at my publisher, and you can get to them from logging onto their website at www.publishamerica.com. I also have a web page set up for people if they want to read chapter one of From the Depths of Hell. It's there for anyone who wants to read it, and you can find that by logging in to www.geocities.com/Lance Trudeau. I didn't have the C in there.
And you are local to Houston, is that correct?
Yeah, I moved here about 19 years ago from Michigan. Jobs weren't real plentiful up there, and I was tired of the cold weather, so I had a friend down here who talked me into coming here, and I've been here ever since.
Great. Well, I want to thank you so much, local author Lance C. Trudeau. His newest book, From the Depths of Hell, and then for something a little more lighthearted, he has a book called The Nuts on My Family Tree. Lance, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us in the studio tonight.
Well, I want to thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. This is Joan Devlin, and you're listening to Queer Voices on KPFT Houston.
JD, and that was another track called The Answer from Amy Cook's CD, The Sky Observer's Guide. She'll be at the festival this Saturday.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
And in the second hour of Queer Voices, we're going to be talking about pre-parade activities, including the Pride Festival. And we'll find out what's in store. And also, Josh.
Is that like foreplay?
Yes, Jennifer.
Okay.
It is. Thank you for asking. Josh Duffy will be performing on the community stage at the festival, and he's going to be talking with J.D. Doyle about his up-and-coming career. Stay tuned to hear more about that. And I want to make a personal invitation to everyone that hears this that can possibly do so to join with us in the pom-pom delegation.
Now, what is pom-pom?
That's the people opposed to moving our parade out of Montrose.
Oh, okay.
And
now, they don't want it moved out.
No.
Okay.
We don't want the parade moved either by date or by location, because there's no place like home. And in this city, our home community is what is called Montrose.
Yes.
And that doesn't, I mean, certainly we are everywhere. We all live, there's many of us that live in
the
different.
The heart of the community
right.
is here in Montrose.
And even though the parade route spans two zip codes, 77098 and 77006. You know
that's just because we were spread out.
That's right. But you know what they say about 77006?
No, tell me.
It's not a zip code. It's a lifestyle. Although lifestyle is not really the correct term.
No,
it's our lives.
It's a choice.
Lifestyle is like whether you... That scares someone you say that, Jennifer.
No.
Lifestyle is like how you wear your hair or...
No, lifestyle is what car you drive.
Right. What kind of car you drive or what kind of... Where your abode is, whether it's, you know, a high rise or a garage apartment or, you know, or if you even have a home.
Orientation is the word we're looking for.
Orientation, yes. And for some of us, it also involves a great deal of choice about whether we're true to ourselves and true to our lives.
Gender identity.
Right. And the parade, being called the Pride Parade, you know, the Pride folks somehow have managed not to have the words gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, homosexual, queer, dyke, faggot, or any of the possible things that could be. I mean, you know, I never thought that I'd just be satisfied with the word gay, the gay Pride Parade. Now suddenly it's looking pretty good.
It's just the Pride Parade.
Yeah. And you know, they have adorable T-shirts.
What do they look like?
The theme this year is Lone Star Pride.
Oh,
and so
cowboys.
They have the state of Texas on one side.
Yeah.
And on the other side, some of the shirts have two guys back to back, I think they are, and another one has two women, and they're in little, you know, cowboy outfits or cow dyke outfits, as the case may be, and they're very cute, but once again, those words are not on the shirt, and
no GLBT, no
and
gay,
and the people are holding guns.
Guns?
Why am I offended by that? I don't know. I just am. So,
not exactly the imagery I would be trying to put on Pride.
Yes. Herald at... I want to say...
Herald at what?
At Woodhead.
Oh.
You thought I was going to talk about Herald, huh?
I was wondering.
I'm trying to find the right information about the location together. Starting at 5:30, you have to be there by 8:15 to march in the delegation. But the pom-pom delegation number 42, and you can walk. There is some limited seating inside the back of a truck if you have mobility problems. And we're going to have costumes and things that make noise and signs and whatever you want to bring in.
So if I'm in support of pom-pom, which means basically keeping the parade where it is here in the Montrose, I should bring something that expresses that. Maybe a pom-pom?
Well,
I have some.
Yes.
My days as a cheerleader.
Yes. And
rah,
the,
rah.
The, 18. Yes, bring your pom-poms. And if you're in some other delegation, because you have to be because it's
yes,
your job.
I'll be in the transgender delegation.
Okay, the Transgender Unity Committee.
Float.
The float. And did you say you were a...
I'm a wheel walker.
She has a duty and to her people. And so you can still show support for pom-pom either by having some kind of sign or something you write on your T-shirt or whatever you're going to wear.
Just express your feeling. If you want the Pride Parade, the Gay Pride Parade or GLBT Pride Parade, to stay in Montrose for next year, that show it. Come out and show it some way or another.
For next year and
years
to follow.
To the future, yes.
And for it to be commemorated in June, which is the anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion.
Which is June 28th.
The actual date was June 28th, so mm-hmm.
We found that out last week by
yes.
saying 29th.
And now we will... No, I think I said 26th. See, that,
no, I said the 29th
I was
and it got corrected.
Park. But... Yes, be involved in, some of us are going to be volunteering during the Pride Festival, and then mm-hmm. we're going to take part in the pom-pom yep. delegation. But no matter where you are, whether you're an observer, mm-hmm. one of the celebratory people in the crowd, mm-hmm. or if you're in the parade in any capacity, we want you to show how you feel
your
about
support.
Your support
absolutely.
For keeping our parade where it belongs in Montrose. And this is an unbiased comment.
This,
by
which is keep the parade in the heart of our community.
If you want to march with me, come
yes.
in pom-pom.
Ah, okay.
All right.
And don't forget about going to www.pridehouston.org.
And that will tell
that's
you
right.
about pride activities,
yes.
but not necessarily pom-pom.
That's right.
And we have a pom-pom Yahoo group but Yahoo groups, but we don't have a website, I think.
Oh.
But anyway, we'll hook you up. If you can find us, Google pom-pom and...
Should we tell them this is KPFT?
Well,
we're going to do all that part.
Yeah,
okay, just
like
check.
Right
I just
now.
Saw the 9 o'clock hour
this
pop
is
up.
Queer Voices and...
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Speak his mind. What if life didn't
I like that a lot. This is J.D. That is What If Life. That's by Josh Duffy, accompanied for that track by Jason and DeMarco, two favorites of mine. And you're going to hear more from Josh in just a little bit.
This is Queer Voices.
Boy, that music just makes everything
just
sound so...
grabs you, doesn't it?
Yeah, so exciting, you know. Well, we have some excitement coming up, and that's on June 23rd, which is the day of the GLBT Pride Parade and Festival. And this is the third year that they've had a festival in conjunction with the parade that has been a little different than in previous years. More of an effort to build the festival and include many different things. So we have with us Richard Proto, who's the festival chair. So what all does that involve?
There's a lot of stuff going on this year at the festival. You know, like you're saying, I mean, this is a big chance for the gay GLBT community to get out and get together, see the organizations that are out there. This year we have a great nonprofit area sponsored by the Hollyfield Foundation and Bunnies on the Bayou. They've underwritten that so these nonprofits can afford to be there and get in front of the people.
Will there be that history tent again?
Oh, absolutely.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was very popular last year.
Was sponsored by MCC, I believe?
Yes, they did it in conjunction with the Kellett Foundation.
Right, yes, yes.
So, I mean, they know that went over very well last year. This year we also have the Walgreens Wellness Pavilion. It's an air-conditioned place. They'll be doing wellness screenings. It's a really exciting time going on with a lot of activities we've added this year.
And that's Legacy Services and the Lesbian Health Initiative are involved in
that. That's right, and the American Heart Association.
Yeah. And part of that is because people in outlying areas may not have the same kind of access to health care services. Or, as I recently realized when we're talking about gay men, it's not just about HIV, AIDS, it's not just about hepatitis C or sexually transmitted disease, or drug use, but there's everything that a man could possibly have as an illness.
That's
or
right.
Health concern for gay men, too.
There's so much more out there, and people, you know, they only focus on the main things, and this is really an opportunity for these organizations to get out there and say, hey, there's not just this one thing we need to look at. We need to look at the whole picture. And, you know, having the Lesbian Health Initiative there, too, is going to make it a great, well-rounded area.
And plus, it's a place you can go to cool off.
That's right.
Have you said technically where the festival will be?
Yeah, where the heck is it?
It's going to be where it was last year. The entrance will be at the intersection of Commonwealth and Westheimer. That'll be the main
the
entrance there.
Store.
Light Bulbs Unlimited, right?
Yeah.
There by
everyone, they'll know it from
right.
That.
That's right.
Just look for the light bulbs.
And kind of when does it start? What's kind of the rough schedule for the entertainment during the day?
The festival opens at 2:00. Not too long after that, we'll be opening up the community stage. Then about, I believe, at 2:30, we'll open up our main stage with our acts there. Nemesis is going to be headlining.
Who is Nemesis?
Nemesis? It's actually two twins. It's interesting.
Two twins. They usually come that way.
Yeah, you know.
It's twin brothers.
Twin brothers, Joshua and Jacob Miller. They're actually Mormons.
No, they're Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're right.
That's what I had thought, too, that they were Mormons. But, there was an article in This Week in Texas a few weeks ago, and it talked about them. They do a TV show.
That's right, Nemesis Rising.
And it deals with...
Well, it's more like it's their story. They filmed their leaving their families, coming to L.A., struggling with a lot of issues, struggling with competition out there, doing their own battles between, you know, one brother was a little more disciplined than the other. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, that's very politically correct.
Yes. But they really can sing.
And they're very good looking, which
never hurts. That's right.
Right. So they're up and coming gay performers.
That's
and,
right.
And certainly by being out with in their music and in their professional career and then having to deal with the religious issues, that's very interesting. So
That makes for a very interesting.
Yeah. How do you go about deciding who gets to perform?
Who gets to perform? Oh, actually, this all starts back in September each year. So, you know, we get together as a group. We have a great group of volunteers that help put this together. And we go out there and we look. We solicit comments from volunteers elsewhere in the organization, people in the community. And we look, and, you know, of course, it all starts with who's available when. And just go from there.
There must be a big competition among prides for artists.
There is. And actually, the prides work well together. We'll call each other, see what, you know, what they've done with artists in the past, who was good, who didn't go so well. And
because
it's really
Because there
nice.
Is an international kind of coordinating
That's right.
group for it's
Enterprise. Yes.
Yeah.
And we have a great volunteer, Ruth Ann Effridge, that
right.
coordinates all that, and she really is a great resource for us in choosing our entertainment and such.
She's the outreach coordinator.
That's right.
Yeah. And so
who's on the main stage? Who's on the community stage?
Nemesis is on the main stage. They're going to headline. Actually, also on our main stage, Pride Idol's going to be culminating that day, and Kimberly Caldwell will be hosting that.
And what exactly is Pride Idol?
Pride Idol. It's kind of like that big show that everyone's watching these days. It's been going on.
Except me.
Yeah.
I make a point not to watch it, just to be contrary.
Over the last few months, actually, at the Guava Lamp, they've been holding competitions and doing eliminations and stuff. So the last few finalists will be competing there for the take home the big prize.
So are all the entries for that GLBT folks?
I believe so, for the most part.
I was wondering if that was a criteria.
Oh, I would have hoped so.
Well, but you don't know.
But there I go assuming.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
they
right.
don't know. There's not JLBT on the shirts.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that question until just now. I wondered, well.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know the answer.
Well, JD and I are big advocates of promoting our community mm-hmm. and the performers and the people that make the community.
Right.
And so.
And I think one of the things we really want to do with the festival and with all the Pride events is sort of try to pull the straight community in too. Let them know that we're not crazed people. You know, we're normal just like anyone else. You know,
we're special.
We're special. We are. But we have this great new thing called Pride in Action where we volunteer at events, you know, whether it's the Thanksgiving thing downtown and whatnot, just to get out there and do things. I mean, mm-hmm. so we're really trying to incorporate the whole community.
Do you volunteer for things that are GLBT specific?
We do both. We really try to spread it out and do a fair amount of both.
Mm-hmm. I think I interrupted your answer on who's going to be on the different stages. We know Nemesis Rising,
uh-huh.
Josh Duffy.
Uh-huh.
Is he on the main stage or the community stage?
He's actually on our community stage.
Okay. And Amy Cook is on... Which
the community stage as well.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on those stages?
Oh, we have Laura will be on our main stage. And then we have a few other entertainers lined up on the community stage as well. That's true. And then there'll be some roving entertainment as well. We have some people that'll be actually out with the audience.
Oh, I've heard about that, roving. No, so, there's people that are going to be doing what?
They'll be doing all kinds of different things. Street
puppets?
Buskers doing things. Actually, the puppets, unfortunately, won't be back this year. But that was a great thing last year. We hope to bring it back.
I like
the
puppets.
Yeah.
It was different. You know, this year we've added some activities. We'll have a gyroscope, one of those things, if you can stand to sit on it.
Any drag queens?
Of course. They wouldn't be Pride without it.
Well, really. But we have to check, because the way things can change, you know, maybe that'll not...
They're drag persons now.
That's right. Our biggest change this year is we've laid it out a little bit differently. Our nonprofit booths have moved to make some better use of some space. We're trying to use every inch that we have.
Are there booths that are for-profit?
Oh, yes. There's a number of for-profit booths. And
including
they
what? Something that's been kind of missing, not enough of in the past years. Food.
Aren't
there more food vendors?
Oh, goodness, yes. The food is just off the walls, a lot better than it has been in the past.
I did notice that last year, yeah.
Yeah, this year we have 9 food vendors coming. And they've done festivals before, and it's really going to punch it up there much.
What about Reed?
I don't know the meaning of that word.
Okay.
We don't allow that.
I see.
Yeah.
I don't want to miss anything. I want to know.
We have some contingency plans in place, but, plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. We'll just have to find a way to have fun with it no matter what happens. Well, is there anything that we haven't asked you about, Richard, that you think people should really, really know?
The all-important question, where can you get tickets?
Aha. Uh-huh.
If you go to pridehouston.org, you can buy them online. Or you can buy them the day of the festival at the main gate. But pridehouston.org is the place to go.
Okay, we've been speaking with Richard Proto. He's the festival chair of Pride Houston. And this Saturday, June 23rd, starting at 2 p.m. Along West Timer, and the rainbow flags are up already.
That's right.
The Banner District, and it's our day. So come out, celebrate, take part.
It'll be a great family time.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Collagen lips, bleach blonde lip, blue contact lens, a beauty mark with the less obscene, a fake baked tan to the extreme. She'll make your pop like bubble gum. One glance and you'll go numb. Make believe or reality, yeah. Or is it something that I see on TV? Great with that new nose job. Bow tie and a Tommy tuck. Signed up for a theater with D. She's got the world on her talent that needs. Copy straight from the magazine.
She's not official. Yes, she ain't real, yeah. Oh, she's not official. But that's a imagination going out of control.
Is Queer Voices. I think she's artificial. This is J.D. Doyle, and we just heard the title track from Josh Duffy's debut CD, and it's a CD I'm very pleased with, and I hear a lot of CDs. We've got Josh in the studio along with his manager, Joseph. Welcome, guys.
Hello, how you doing?
How you doing?
A little closer, Josh.
Thanks for having me tonight.
Very glad to have you. You actually had another event last week, the Pride kickoff event. How did that go?
Right. Oh, that was awesome. It was in the Dinosaur Room at the Museum of Natural Science here in Houston. And we had Coffee, the host, with the Moses.
Coffee the drag queen, not the beverage.
Oh, yeah.
Some people may not know that.
Yeah. She's a local drag queen. And then Alan Lett, my producer, was also a performer there. Yeah.
Tell us about the new album.
The new album. It's my very first album, my debut album. It's entitled Artificial, but really, when you hear the word artificial, you think dance music, you think, you know, just abnormal music. It's really pop rock and maybe a little bit dance here and there. Just a fun album. It's really personal. I wrote all the songs, co-produced all the songs, and I took a lot of my personal experiences in life and put that into my music.
Is this a genre that you kind of got into naturally?
I would say so. I mean, growing up, I've loved everything from R&B to pop. To orchestral. I still play the flute. I played the flute for 13 years now and went to LSU for a flute major performance. But this album is a whole eclectic mix of who I am and music-wise.
So you didn't have anybody saying, well, we think you should do this, we think you should do this. This is what you would do.
Yeah.
Left to your own devices.
It comes naturally, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to force myself to do some, you know, crazy... unnatural
punk
thing.
Or folk or whatever.
I'm not a punk.
Okay. That does bring a question to mind. This is very pop rock. How do you write the songs? Do you write on guitar? Do you write on piano? How do you write?
Well, usually it starts off with a tune in your head, just like you were to whistle a tune. You know, something catchy, and then for me personally, I try to find some words that go with that tune, and then I go to the keyboard. That's when I get to the keyboard, start playing around with chords, and then I have my little drum kit at home, and I try to, you know, make a beat to it, and from there I take it to my awesome producer, Alan Lett, and we get together, and we just, you know, we take our time and make sure that the song's perfect and exactly what was in my head.
I wanted to talk about Alan. I'm a big fan of his albums and his productions. How did you meet up with him anyhow?
You know, I have the worst memory. I think, here's what happened. Jason DeMarco, they're also on the album on What If Life. I met one of Jason DeMarco's fans out in Austin, and Jason DeMarco got in contact with me and mentioned that their producer, Alan Lett, was here in Houston. And so he said, you know, why don't you two get together and try to come up with some, you know, music and see what happens. So we've been friends, good friends, for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm. What inspired the song Artificial? Or who inspired the song Artificial?
Yeah, it's a who, for sure. I have a whole bunch of funny stories. This Artificial is such a great, fun song for me to perform. And the reason is because I can always think about the person who inspired that song. When I was a summer camp counselor, when I was 19 years old, I'm still 19.
Friends, he's so young.
My summer camp director was also a good friend who was also a drag queen. And I just happened to look at my Coke can in front of me, and on the back of it, it said artificially flavored. And I was like, that's a good word, artificial. You know, I should write a song. And as soon as I said that, I looked to my right, and there was my friend Chad, who was a drag queen. I was like, and 5 minutes later, the song was written.
Really?
It just came naturally. I just, you know, I don't know how that happens, but in 5 minutes, I knew what the song was going to sound like. I knew what it was. It was just, you know, it was it. I knew it.
And that's the first single off the CD?
Mm-hmm, Artificial. It was released to Sirius Satellite Radio this past winter, and it did really well.
We don't really have a lot of... quote, gay charts that we can really look at, and mm-hmm. Sirius is one of the ones in the country, and in some indication.
Yes. They're, you know, one of the only, the few, I should say, solely gay radio.
Right. I know Jeremy Hovey's one of the main guys there.
Great guy.
Very good guy, yes, indeed. Hard question time. Which song on the album do you think has the strongest message?
Oh, geez. Strongest message, it's a tie between two.
Okay.
Can we have ties?
Sure, we can have ties.
Number one...
You're so cute. We can have ties.
Number one, I would have to say, would be What If Life. What If Life, because I take that into my life every day, still, since I wrote that song. You know, the song's about pushing your life and making sure you make something out of yourself and do those things that you never thought that you could do. And then second would probably be Truth. You know, being true to who you are. And so if you've heard those two songs, you would get how I believe that those are strong messages.
We heard What If Life before the interview started earlier.
Okay.
And how did you get Jason and DeMarco involved on that one? Was that your producer?
In part. I actually worked with Jason DeMarco on Till the End of Time, which was their latest release. And I actually played the flute for Just in Time, one of the songs in that album. And in return, they decided, you know, let's go ahead and sing on What If Life. And I really wanted them to be a part of that song, because not only is it an inspirational song and more of what their style of music is, I could just hear their vocals on that track. And I just knew it was going to be a great song in the end.
I think they're wonderful. I've been a fan of theirs for quite a while. I've interviewed them a couple of times. Pure talent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which track seems to be getting the most radio attention? Or has that shifted?
Oh.
Joseph is laughing here. Joseph, the manager, is laughing here.
Why are you laughing?
Chime in, Joseph, when you want to.
Why are you laughing?
Because we didn't think it would be the...
you didn't think it would be the song...
We didn't think it would be the song of choice for...
I always believed in it.
I believed in it. We just thought it would be one that people would hear and then think that was nice, but...
Well, and that song would be Callback, which is, I think, number 4 or 5 on the CD. And it's a song about people that never call you back and not having that common courtesy anymore. It's one thing that I was raised to have is common courtesy and to be nice. I'm a Southern boy. I'm from Louisiana. And a lot of people my age, I would say, don't have that respect. And when I first moved from Baton Rouge to Houston, none of my friends kept in touch with me. And it was so disappointing because I thought we were really good friends. And so I decided to write a song about it.
Well, your album is very... I want to say poppy and radio friendly, and that's kind of neat to achieve for a debut album.
Oh, well, thank you.
How did you do that?
Well, thank you. You know, I think that's just who I am. I listen to a lot of mainstream, and I would like to incorporate that into the gay audience. From my personal experience, I think there's a lot of gay music out there that's a little abstract, which is fun, and but I think, you know, gay music can have a little bit of mainstream to it, and
a little bit of meat to the content.
Most of all, if it's catchy,
exactly.
If it's catchy, you know, people are going to remember it. You know, you always have to focus on that melody, and that's what I like. You know, as a songwriter, I focus on having a catchy melody and something that will be timeless.
You've got a song that's a little more low key on the album, and the title. Excuse me. Now, which one? You know which one I'm thinking of?
Low key. How low key?
Well, not all the way, but
is it orchestral?
It's not a ballad, but it's a little more down tempo.
Is it The Better Part of Me, or
Here We Go Again?
No, Here We Go Again. It's up.
But it's
Safe. There's I Will Love You. Pretend. Oh, geez.
Too many choices, I guess.
I know.
I'm sorry.
Low key. I don't know. Do you ever be?
I was just wondering how you know, go up and down on, you know, because they're not all action like Artificial.
Yeah, you know, every good CD is going to have a wide variety of tempos and moods and emotions, and those ballads help bring out the drama of the CD. And to be honest, when I went into recording the CD, I wasn't very much of a ballad singer. I was very much into the, you know, upbeat stuff. Like, maybe you would say, like, Justin Timberlake, Britney. I like that feel of music. But it just so happens in the recording process, I think the ballads suited me a little bit more. And so I went ahead with writing a few more ballads than the up-tempo tracks.
I've not seen you perform yet, but I've heard your stage presence is very good. How did you develop that?
Oh, geez, I don't know. It's
watching a lot of videos.
Yeah, watching a lot of artists. You know, I don't know what it is.
But I've heard that the patter between the songs flows well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen many artists who can't do that.
Wow.
The song's good, but... then they just lose you between tracks.
Well, you know, as a performer, I mean, that comes along with the package. You need you have to engage with the audience, and you have to have a good time. Not only do you have to have a good time, they have to have a good time. And so if you're not having a good time on stage, you're not interacting, then, you know, it's not going to be right. So I always make sure I have a good time on stage. I'm, you know, interacting and having people sing back to me and, you know, just being fun, you know.
Which song was the hardest on this album for you?
Oh, as far as what? To write?
I'll let you go with that.
To write or... I would say for to write, the hardest song on the album would have to be... God, that's a hard one. I don't know. They kind of... Maybe Everbe? I think Everbe, it's a slower song. It's a very acoustic song. And although there's not that many lyrics to it, I wanted to make sure that it had a good message to it. And so whenever you're trying to write a message, you know, you can kind of get tongue-tied and get lost. And so I think, yeah, I think I spent a little bit more time on Everbee than the rest of the tracks.
Does it sometimes a struggle between the message and making it catchy?
Yeah. And to... Also, the funny thing, you know, my music isn't gender specific, but Everbee is the only track on the CD that does mention a girl. And so, I don't know, maybe because I'm gay, I have a hard time writing it. But the song Everbee is about being in love with someone who won't ever be in love with you. And so, I've never really been in that situation, or maybe I have and I just never noticed, but to write a song about being in a situation that you've never been in can be difficult, you know.
Maybe Joseph can answer this. Has the issue of being genderless come up? You know, artists wrestle with, do you want to deliberately be neutral in the lyrics for marketing, for more, I don't know, exposure?
Yeah, it definitely comes up, but with the way of the world now, and with, you know, gay being out there and being out there really loud, you have an audience, a huge audience. We talked about this from day one. Do you come out as a gay artist or do you not come out as a gay artist? We have some great friends that have been very, very successful and that have recently, as of this year, have come out. And they've said, you know, it was a lot easier to go and make all of our money and then come out and be who we want.
Mm-hmm.
Josh and I both are very proud of who we are, and I think that played a very big part in how he started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I just, you know, I think it's time for that. And I'm not saying I'm the very first person to do this, but it's time for gay artists to really come out as gay artists
out
from
the get-go.
From the get-go.
Stand up.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, you know, we need to have that revolution right now. I mean, there's so much talent out there.
And Everbee did confuse a lot of people when they heard it, because it is about a guy who is obviously in love with this girl.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a flip side. She's actually cheating on him.
Right.
So it's, you don't hear a lot of that in music. It's usually the opposite, you know, the guy's cheating on the girl. So
okay. We're getting close to the wire here. Real quickly, are you working on any videos?
Yes, soon. We actually had to postpone the video, and we're going to do it to Artificial. And so it's going to be kind of fun. I'm not going to give away the video.
Visually, you can go. You do a lot with the song Artificial.
Yeah, you can do a lot with it.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a very fun video and to help, you know, introduce me to the business.
You have the Go-Go Girls in the background.
I'll have whoever wants to be in the video. You know, you can show up. Yep.
Okay, where can people find your CD locally in a store?
Okay, locally in the store in Houston, we have it at Soundwaves, which is right here off of Montrose. And we have it's on iTunes, which is awesome. CDBaby.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go directly to my MySpace page and my official website and purchase from there, which would be awesome.
and your website is where?
It's joshduffyonline.com.
Was joshduffy.com taken?
You know, I don't know.
It was.
I think it was.
By another singer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you remember?
Oh, no,
and
it couldn't be.
And the same thing with MySpace.com. It's MySpace.com/... Josh Duffy online.
Okay.
I think someone else had the name.
All right. We just heard from Josh Duffy and his manager, Joseph, and we're going to go out with the song Callback.
All righty.
This song goes out to all the people in the world who just don't give a damn anymore.
Hit it!
On. It's so funny how things have changed since I've been gone. I kept in touch with patiently for you to get back to me. Well, my intention was a misconception. Now I'm back to being me. I said I'm back to being me. The phone's off hook, so I won't answer. You never call back. What we had, well, it's all over. You never come back.
thought you were cool. Guess I thought wrong. But that's okay, didn't need you anyway. But thank you for this song. I kept in touch, waited patiently for you to get back to me. Well, my intention was a misconception. Now I'm back to being me. Yeah, now the phone's off hook, so I won't answer. But you never called back. What we had, well, it's all over. But you never called back. The phone's off hook, so I won't answer. But you never called back. What we had, well, it's all over. But you never called back. Well, I was always there for you, even when you weren't there for me. Whatever happened to common courtesy?
This is Queer Voices.
I love to be queer.
Just days before the state legislature voted down a threat to marriage equality in Massachusetts, Boston's LGBT community celebrated Pride with a bang. The weekend's highlights included Deval Patrick's participation in the grand June 9th parade, making him the first sitting U.S. governor to join such an event. Paving the way for the mass march, at least 1,000 people took to the streets the night before for the annual Dyke March. Helen Matthews, who's known locally as Home Fries, spoke with organizers and participants about building community and challenging militarism and transphobia.
On Friday, June 8th, Boston's 12th annual Dyke March flooded through the streets downtown and rallied on the Boston Common. Over 1,000 queer women and allies paraded with an upbeat spirit, inspiring some participants to call it the largest and most celebratory Dyke March in Boston's history.
The sentiment is one of, like, celebration, and that people can just come together and express themselves freely.
I'm loving it. All our dykes coming together and representing each other.
Oh, it's just great being in a crowd full of dykes when you spend your life surrounded by straight people. I love it.
There's tons of people. There's about over 1,000, I would say.
Chris Hurley, an organizer of the Dyke March.
And I think everyone's really anxious. People arrived here early, actually, for the march, which is unusual.
Kristen Porter, a community organizer, addressed the crowd passionately.
We are beautiful and powerful and fierce and hot and political and sexual and loving and learning people. And we have gathered tonight to march in solidarity, to march in inclusion, to march for visibility, and to march for equality. It is ours. Go take it!
A main political theme of the Dyke March surfaced through controversy earlier in the week over the marginalization of transgendered and transsexual women who had planned to march. The organizers initially invited Bitch, a rock musician who many say has endorsed oppressive and disrespectful treatment of trans women. Demands that she be canceled cropped up online and through a letter-writing campaign. Organizers canceled her performance at the last minute. Robbie Samuels, an activist who organized to cancel Bitch's performance, felt the outcome was bittersweet.
I'd rather we had spent energy elsewhere in the last 4 days, but yes, I think that it raised the issue and was probably handled as best it could be.
Kristen Porter spoke to the crowd about judgment towards trans women in Boston Dyke communities.
Sometimes we might pass judgment on people from where they come, and what I have to say about that is very simple. No matter where somebody comes, we need to honor who they choose to be today. And from where they come is frankly none of our business.
Janie, an organizer with a group of self-identified quote-unquote femme dykes called Mad Femme Pride, spoke about the marginalization of feminine queer women during the 1990s.
There was a lot of hostility to femmes. There's hostility in the women's community, and there's hostility in the men's community too, actually, against sort of femmy boys. And, there were some people who have always been supportive of femmes, but there was a lot of, like, what are you doing here? Don't you know this is a queer event? You know, you're obviously straight because you're wearing a skirt kind of attitudes, and I think that's already been changing, and I think Mad Femme Pride is just a good way to organize and help people keep on making that change to be inclusive of everyone.
We're obviously protesting homophobia. That's a pretty obvious one.
Stephanie Lowett, a Dyke March organizer.
But we're also protesting the lack of freedom to own identity, which I think is a really important idea, the fact that people don't often get to choose their own language about their identity and about themselves, and the Dyke March is a place that people can do that. It's also a really important forum for people to be able to be queer in whatever form they want to be without necessarily feeling like they have to be part of Pride, and some people feel very excluded from Pride, so this is a good venue for them.
The second main political theme that emerged at the Dyke March was a call to end militarism. The implicitly pro-war theme of the Boston Pride celebrations prompted some people at the march to demand an end to the wars in Iraq and Palestine. Community organizer Aliza Shapiro spoke out.
There are people in the audience who feel that Boston Pride's theme of Ask, Tell is a great message of community service and outreach. There are others here who think militarism is nothing to be proud of and tears communities apart, no matter what spin you put on it.
Supporting gays in the military is assimilationist and not the path to queer liberation. Right? I don't think that queer people will experience or achieve freedom by buying into institutions like military and marriage. To say that our priorities as queer folks is to gain access to institutions that are racist, that are classist, that support U.S. imperialism is not and should not be our political priorities as queer people.
Clara Mercer, a new Boston resident, came to the march for political reasons.
Using the politics of queerness not just for specifically queer aims, but also like saying that issues of like sexism and racism and class equality and everything else are all related and important.
I asked Stephanie about the protest's history.
It was started many years ago by a bunch of queer women and trans people who decided that Pride wasn't the place for them. They really did feel excluded from the political process and felt like Pride was becoming very commercial, and so the Dyke March became an alternative for them, and it was started in protest.
Joe Trujillo, also a Dyke March organizer, elaborated.
It was designed to address the male-centeredness of gay Pride, just to provide, like, some people say alternative, I like to say supplement to gay Pride. It began as, and it continues to be, completely grassroots, and people are really committed to the idea that it's grassroots.
Aliza summoned the original demands of the Dyke March.
To me, the Dyke March is about visibility for all queers, for all the people left out of the mainstream corporate culture that is another bank, another nightclub, another business, another float of young, buff, stud, gay men marching in the Pride Parade.
Kim Schultz, a Dyke March organizer, said she wants the march to build relationships with other Dyke communities in Boston.
I still feel like there are so many bridges for us to connect within our own community. I would love to see us reach out a lot more.
As the march stomped through the city, shopkeepers and bystanders stood to watch.
I came outside the store to support and see people be who they want to be. People need to be able to express themselves and be who they are and be free. That's what you got to be.
Everybody choose their own way in this life. I support this protest, yes.
Looks like there's a bunch of lesbians out there.
Growing up Irish Catholic, I would have to say that it's in the suburbs, in a lily white neighborhood, it's not the norm. But being in Boston, it's a very diverse city, and they celebrate their right to express themselves, I guess.
At the end of the protest, Aliza cut to the chase.
I think queer sex is a radical act. And I think you should all be having more queer sex.
In Boston, this is Homefront.
The Stonewall Rebellion, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. On June 27, 1969, police officers raided the Stonewall Inn, a small gay bar on Christopher Street in New York City, arresting some of its patrons. The police had been routinely raiding the gay bars, wielding their clubs, and arresting gay customers just for being who they were. But on this fateful night, they fought back. An outraged crowd outside the bar grew to several hundred. As the police filed out, the crowd hurled coins, bottles, stones, and garbage at them. Cowed by the onslaught, the officers took cover inside the bar. Riot control police eventually arrived to rescue the officers and break up the crowd. Many historians called this the first gay riot in history. One gay newsletter described it as, quote, the hairpin drop heard round the world. Yet the influence of these crusaders is beyond measure, for this event marked the start of gay liberation. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
Lily Tomlin is one of the world's foremost comedians, with the prestigious Mark Twain Prize for American Humor among her many honors. She's created the ever-so-truthful Edith Ann, the telephone company's memorable Ernestine, and a host of other offbeat characters during her long career on television, in movies, and on stage. In anticipation of her Pride weekend performances, June 21st and 22nd in Minneapolis, Tomlin chatted with host Dixie Trichel of KFAI-FM's Fresh Fruit Collective, and members Lee Combs, John Townsend, and Norman Striezek.
As the greatest multi-character artist ever,
well,
you are.
Yes, it is. Would say, well.
You have well over 20 characters. How do you create and develop your characters?
It's impossible to know. If I knew, I would create more. I try to do one a day or something. But you get an idea for one or something. Sometimes you see something or a little moment, an essence of some human being that you somehow just your paths cross, or you consciously, more intellectually, try to invent something. If I did an old special like I did one years ago in the 80s called Lily Sold Out, the conceit was I went to Vegas for the money. And I was so very pretentious and artistic, and I wouldn't go to Vegas. You know, it was just too much beneath me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they offer me enough money that I wind up going. So I did a whole thing where I rationalized going to Vegas, and I do my seven ages of woman, and of course I turn it into like an Anne Margaret act.
Oh yeah.
And I dive into a tank, and I run, I get shot out of a cannon, and I ride in on a motorcycle. And so in that particular one, I started doing Tommy Velour, who would be like kind of a Vegas headliner.
Absolutely.
Guy. And so you invent people to fill out that kind of family. And then when I did Lily for President the next year, I did a Purvis Hawkins, who was more like a soul singer.
Yeah.
Like Smokey or someone like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you won an Emmy for that.
Yeah, no, and we won an Emmy for Sold Out, too.
Oh, did you? Excellent.
Yeah.
Jane Wagner, your writing partner and also life partner, correct?
Right.
You have been creating and living life together for a long time.
Yeah, 37 years.
37 years, wow. That's so long.
You want 36 years, she'll smack me in the head.
Well, imagine that you all were out in your own way for your whole lives.
It's so funny you mentioned it, because when we did those specials back in the 70s, in fact, Edith was the first thing, the Edith album was the first thing we ever did together. But that would have been 71, I guess, and came out in 72. But when we used to do those specials, I mean, there were kids on the staff who would say to us, who were like, they'd say, I don't think you and Jane should drive to work together. Probably somebody who had a lot of heterosexual damage. I mean, a nice woman, who was very much, terribly confined by that kind of pressure, and she was probably thinking she was looking out for me, and for Jane. But not that we never heeded that, of course. And first of all, we didn't have two cars, but we wouldn't have done it anyway. We thought it was kind of
We thought it was kind of sweet and funny, you know, that she would make such a gesture.
I mean, you didn't necessarily, what I would call, do an Ellen.
I certainly didn't. And I did it in different ways, you know. Part of it, I mean, I've never really spoken of this. Part of it was my mother. You know, my mother's died now. And my mother was is a Southern woman from Kentucky, and she died in Nashville, actually. But I was respectful. I tried to be as respectful of my mother's needs and wishes as I could, you know,
sure,
without making a big deal about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was no secret to my mom either. I mean, she was a darling woman and very witty and everything else, but she was basically a Christian woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was troublesome for her. I don't think she didn't embrace us. Sorry to say it, but I used to say my mom really prefers the approval of her concierge over her creator, which was a line from an old French short story that I was really fond of, because, I mean, she was more worried about my relatives and what they would say, and I managed to go through it, and I'm very close to my family, and, of course, they're much more open about it because it's a younger generation. The older generation, who are all dead now, I mean, it was hard for them to deal with. Pretty homophobic anyway, many people in the South.
Sure.
Because of religion.
I've got a question for you about Robert Altman. Just your thoughts. Did you ever talk with him about queerness or just where he was at with all that? Because
it never even dawned on me. I mean, to me, Bob was such an open kind of soul, you know, just a freewheeling spirit. It never occurred to me that it would be an issue of any kind for him. It's just like putting me in a movie. Nobody at that time in 1974 or 5, whatever it was, I would have put me, it was right off of Laugh-In, into a movie like Nashville.
Why was that?
Because people thought of me as Ernestine, or they thought of me as a telephone operator, or they just thought of me in that little slot, you know, this very, you know, comedic broad off of a television show. And you didn't even cross over from TV that easily in those days.
Right.
What would you like to be remembered for?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't even think of life in those terms, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I don't think any of us stay remembered that long in terms of real time. You know, we remember Einstein and we remember, but that's a very finite span of time. I guess for maybe a couple of years, I'd probably be remembered now for YouTube. I used to say I'd be remembered for Ernestine. Would be published in my obituary, be her picture. Well, that, you know, a lot of years have passed since then, and now I just noticed in a biography somebody put up on the internet the other day that they mentioned Ernestine and then they mentioned YouTube.
One of your performances at Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis will be a benefit for Rainbow Families.
We're really excited.
We're really glad.
That you're doing a VIP reception and benefiting Rainbow Families as a GLBT family organization here in Minnesota.
I'm thrilled. Yeah, we usually try to hook up with some gay organization.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me on.
And we look forward to seeing you perform at Orchestra Hall and in your films and on TV. And
all right, cut it short now. That's enough of that.
All over the place.
She owes everything to me. Everything.
Yeah.
That was Lily Tomlin entertaining the Fresh Fruit Collective at KFAI-FM in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Don Lupo, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Helen Homefries Matthews, and Dixie Trico with Lee Combs, John Townsend, and Norman Strizek contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. You can listen online to This Way Out anytime exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from listeners like you. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. To request a CD or audio cassette copy of this week's program or with any other questions, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038 USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KFAR Knoxville, Tennessee, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And we really appreciate it. They stay tuned.
I like that.
That's cute. Yeah, aren't they cute on This Way Out? They really do a great job, too. I really enjoyed that Lily Tomlin interview.
Yes.
So, we have to thank our guests tonight. It was a very diverse show. We had Tiffany Bird, who's the Activities Director at the Baring Omega, Adult Care Center for people living with HIV/AIDS, and that number there is 713-341-3751 to get in touch with the care center manager, and they'll help you out if you need those services. Also, Joan Devlin, thanks for her great interview with Lance C. Trudeau, his book From the Depths of Hell, and telling us about that. And of course, we had the Pride Festival preview, which was with Richard Pronto, the festival director. Lots of interesting things in store. Josh Dovey, your excellent interview with that up and coming artist who'll be part of the community stage at the festival. And after hours, we'll have a delegation in the parade.
Yes.
And so you can join up with them if you would like and support them. And once again, I invite you to be with me in the parade as part of the Pom Pom delegation number 42.
Yeah, if you can't be there, you can be supportive. And next week on Queer Voices will be our post-pride wrap-up. And we'll also talk with Christiane Salinas with Q-Fest, the Houston's Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Film Festival, and I'll have a special transgender guest.
Aunt Jennifer, do you know who the first transsexual actor to play a transsexual character was on TV?
No, I don't.
Alexandra Billings, who will be my main interview on Queer Music Heritage next week. She's a wonderful singer. She is so funny. It's a very good interview. No thanks to me. She is just a good interview. And also next week, as part of Queer Music Heritage, the new group, The Clicks, who you may have heard on The L Word, their lead singer is a trans man, and they gave me a cute little interview that we can hear from them, too. Next week, the second hour of Queer Voices.
And, of course, we'll have This Way Out, the internationally syndicated GLBT news magazine, and news, commentary, and much more.
Now, where is the Pride Festival going to be held?
The entrance is at Westheimer and Commonwealth.
Near Light Bulbs
right
Unlimited.
By the Light Bulbs Unlimited. If you come in the vicinity just east of Montrose at Westheimer, you're bound to find it. Follow the rainbow flags.
And it starts at when?
The festival starts at 2, and the parade, I believe, start time is
8:45.
And the parade always starts on time. At least it always did when Jack was in charge.
Well, and since he's
going to be... Jack
on that note,
it'll be worth seeing just what Jack wears next Saturday.
That's right.
You want
Grand Marshal.
He spent all this evening changing outfits.
He was sewing sequins or something.
Yeah, that's Jack, all right.
Okay, well,
for more information on Pride activities, go to www.pridehouston.org.
Yes. Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m., for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt. We'll be right back.
Seattle Peace Chorus will stop in Houston on its way to Venezuela, where it will conduct a goodwill tour. They will perform a concert to benefit the creation of a peace house at St. Mark's United Methodist Church.
The show is Tuesday, June 19th at 7 p.m. at St. Mark's United Methodist Church, located at 600 Pecor Street.
Seattle Peace Chorus wages peace and fosters social justice through music. And in that spirit, the chorus visits Venezuela in June to promote goodwill and learn about Venezuelan efforts to further social welfare and economic justice. The chorus will offer friendship through song and conversation. For additional information on the Seattle Peace Chorus, visit seattlepeacechorus.org. For additional information on the free concert, call 832-693-5710. This is KPFT, Houston.
KPFT's third annual...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT, Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.